Thank you very much, Chris Morales, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. John, we have learned over the past 24 hours that Miami Dolphins are fielding inquiries about quarterback Josh Rosen. Rosen was a top-rated recruit coming out of high school, first true freshman to ever start at quarterback for UCLA. He was drafted in a season opener. He was drafted number 10 by Arizona, got traded to Miami. Now he could be winding up on a third team. Here's the question. Why didn't Josh Rosen make it in the NFL?
I think he's, and I really liked him in college, I think he's very, very solid, but I don't know if there's any spectacular there. You could chalk it up for, like, Matt Leinart played 10 years in the NFL, didn't really become a star. But he was very solid. My fear is that is Rosen's fate, that, you know, he's not going to make mistakes. He's not going to lose any games for you. I just don't know if teams in the NFL think he can win games for you, which is weird because at UCLA, he clearly did. At UCLA, he won games all the time. But I think he's been labeled that early. Like, Leinart got labeled that early, and
he
could never shake it. And then he became kind of a career backup. There's another guy that played at UCLA named Matt Moore, who's been in the NFL for like 15 years.
Yeah,
who you could hit the same thing with. Why do you think he's at least so far he hasn't made it?
Well, you know, I think he comes. I have this prejudice. He comes from a wealthy family.
He used to be a tennis player,
which I think sometimes subconsciously reduces how much fight you have, because you know you're going to fall back on that. I always thought that was a problem with Johnny Manziel. And there's a sense of entitlement. I mean, I just remember, you're going to think this is stupid, but I remember Josh Rosen putting a hot tub in his dorm room. Now, to me, first of all, it was ridiculous. It was funny. It was ridiculous. But there's also a sense of entitlement that goes there. I think Josh Rosen doesn't have the makeup to be a quarterback in the NFL. And you said maybe he can be solid. He hasn't even shown that he can be solid yet.
He hasn't started any NFL games, has he?
He may have started a couple in Arizona, but he has not even demonstrated that he's a capable backup quarterback right now. So I don't think he's going to make it. I think, you know, the Dolphins are cutting bait. Arizona cut bait. I just don't think he's going to be an NFL quarterback.
Well, I hope he gets a chance, but we'll see. I mean, my fear is that he'll be labeled a career backup, and once that happened to Leinart, that's what he became, a career backup. So I hope it doesn't happen to Rosen. All right. Mace, conservative political pundit Tommy Lauren, who has become famous by performing rants against lazy people and people she calls losers, is now apparently dating former Bears quarterback Jay Cutler. This has caused Twitter to go crazy, but in a really funny way. Here's a sample of some... Do you know who Tommy Lauren is?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so here's a sample of some random tweets. Jay Cutler and Tommy Lauren are dating. She can rest easily that if he tries to make a pass at another woman, it won't get there.
Ha!
Here's another one. Tommy Lauren claims to be against lazy bums sitting on their asses, not contributing to society, but now she's dating Jay Cutler? Couple more. It makes sense that Jay Cutler is dating Tommy Lauren because 95% of his passes wound up going way to the right. And finally, Mace, I have a riddle for you.
Yep.
After their first overnight date, what did Jay Cutler make Tommy Lauren for breakfast?
Don't know.
Turnovers! All right, so here's my question. Is it mean for me to root for these two to stay together just for the jokes? On one hand, I'm encouraging love, but on the other, the only reason I'm doing that is to make fun of them. Does that make me a mean guy?
Well, I mean, I happen to see, and I rarely watch reality TV, but Juan insisted.
You're missing out. God bless
Juan. Juan insisted that I look at Very Cavallari.
Oh, one of the most underrated reality shows of all time.
And Jay Cutler was a total D-head on that show.
Yes, he was.
He was. He was mad at the world.
Mad at everything. Mad at the dog, mad at the kids, mad at her, mad at all of it.
So I give this relationship zero chance of succeeding.
Right.
But old worn-out quarterbacks and crazy pundits deserve love, too. I hope it works out for those kids.
I do, too. And at least until the end of the pandemic year when we could all use a good laugh. Keep the jokes coming.
Yes, absolutely. All right. The Clemson Tigers have won two out of three of the last college football playoff titles. Hardest part of winning the championship, in my opinion, is actually making it to the playoff. Last year, Clemson played exactly one team that finished in the top 25. It was Virginia, and they finished number 24. The ACC, easily the weakest of the five power conferences. Alabama, tough road every year. Ohio State, tough road every year. Oklahoma, tough road every year. Pac-12, tough road every year. Does Clemson's unbelievably soft schedule detract from any of their success?
No, because of how well they've done in the playoff and in non-conference games. Whenever they play a tough non-conference opponent, they always win. And Mace, look at their record in the playoff. They've beaten Alabama twice. I think they beat Ohio State once. I mean, every indication is that they can not only compete with the big boys, but beat them. So I think that if their schedule was, if they played nothing but cupcakes, sooner or later that would trip them up in the playoff. But it doesn't. They're always really good in the playoff. So I think if Clemson has an undefeated record or a one-loss record, they deserve to be there because they always show up when the games are important.
Yeah, I will say this, John. You said they play tough non-conference schedules. This year it was scheduled to be the Citadel and Akron.
Well, in that case, then I take it back.
Citadel and Akron.
Yeah, but in other years, I think that they've agreed to play. I think they played Miami. Well, is Miami in their conference?
Yeah, in their conference.
And is Florida State in their conference?
Florida no. State's in their conference.
No,
yes. Florida State's in the ACC. Florida's in the SEC.
Yeah. So normally, Florida State's good. They just haven't been good lately. Remember, this used to be the old rap against Florida State, is that they never played anybody until they got to the championship.
Last year, got to give them credit, they played both Wofford and Charlotte.
Hey, don't take Wofford lightly, either as a school or as the Rams' backup quarterback, okay?
See, I think running the table is the reason why the Pac-12 hasn't gotten to the college football playoff. It's just a really balanced conference. I think the Big Ten is a balanced conference. The Big 12, always tough to win. The SEC, one of the toughest things. ACC, just a roll job. You just roll right through Wofford and Akron and the Citadel and beat your weak sister
conference. The problem with the Pac-12 is when they go out of the conference. Like, who did Oregon lose to really early in the season last year?
Last year, they lost a close one.
Yeah, right at the beginning of the year, they played a game, I think, in the Superdome. Maybe they played LSU or Alabama. But if you lose right out of the gate to—
Sometimes that's okay to lose, right? It was Auburn. They lost 27-21 to Auburn.
Yeah, so I think that Clemson has shown, at least in the last since Dabo got there, that if you give them a tough opponent, they can beat them. They can handle them.
Yeah, I'd rather see them toughen up their schedule, personally. It's to you.
All right. Mace, Allegiant Stadium, the new Raiders stadium in Vegas,
yep,
is set to become the first ever sports venue to be 100% completely cashless. They will not accept cash in the parking lots or anywhere inside the stadium. If you happen to have only cash on you, you would then have to go to a kiosk and exchange the cash for a money card, which you could then use to buy anything inside the building. They're doing this for a couple of reasons. First, it speeds things up if everybody pays with a card because nobody has to wait for change. But it's also a COVID-19-driven thing. By doing it this way, no cash ever changes hands, and you just slide your card without any human contact. But here's what's weird. Think about it. Vegas is a cash town. It's one of the only places where everybody carries cash because everybody gambles.
Right.
Plus, you need cash to tip people, like drivers, hotel workers, maitre d's at restaurants. You know, you want a good table, you got to slip them $50. So a couple of questions here.
$50 to a maitre d to get a table?
Well, especially in Vegas, like, because if you're going to a show,
yeah,
like, and you want to get a table up front, like you're going to dinner and a show, and let's say you're at the Hard Rock or you're, you know, you're going to see Billy Joel or Elton John, you want to get up to the front?
Slip and Mater D's 50s.
No,
wow.
No, for that, 100.
100 slip. Yeah. 100, I don't pay more than 100 for the dinner.
Right, but if you want to get a good seat for the show, you got to slip in the 100. Now, a couple questions for you. Is this, let's say this takes, because I think most people like the idea. Is this probably the end of the stadium vendor, the guy who walks down the aisle and offers you peanuts or beer? Because think about it. Now you would have to assume that the pandemic's over, because I don't think those guys are coming back during the pandemic anyway.
No.
But assume the pandemic's over, and we're in a, you and I are in a cashless stadium, and we're in the middle of the section, okay?
Right.
And a guy's walking down the aisle, and you and I want a couple of beers. Is one of us willing to pass our credit card down the aisle? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So I pay for everything on my phone.
Right.
I have Apple Pay on my phone. I've done it for COVID-19.
And by the way, they will
just do it.
To your point, they will take Apple Pay in this new stadium for the Raiders.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much just for convenience sake. I hate cash. I hate carrying cash. I especially hate change. Just keep your change. I don't want any change.
Okay.
Everything registers on my phone. Like, for example, I go buy a diet soda every morning before the show.
Right.
And it is a dollar.
My wife would tell you that that's liquid death.
Liquid death, I know. Yeah. It's $1.09. Now, I'm not going to – I don't want to pay $2 and get 92 cents worth
Where do
of
you
change.
Buy it?
Gas Bendy? Station up the street.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I just Apple Pay it, so I don't get the change. It's just –
Okay.
I don't know. I think we are moving
So answer my question. Do you think that's the end of the vendor? Because you're not going to hand your phone
down. Yeah, you'd have to pass your phone all the way down.
Which you're not going to do.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to have to come up with other ways – to get us stuff if we're seeing. Now here's my other question. If people stop carrying cash, like if you completely stop carrying any cash at all.
Right.
I always carry cash. I just feel naked without it. But you always say that you would rather not carry any.
Right.
So will people who live off tips take a hit? In other words, if it's your last day in a hotel room, like I always leave $20 for the maid.
Right.
For the person that cleans my hotel room.
That's nice.
You won't have $20, so you can't leave a tip for the maid. Do you think that people like that, or doormen, or people that help with their bag, the guys who help with your luggage, do you think they take a hit in a cashless world?
Okay, so in certain places, it's probably necessary to carry cash for a tip. New York is a cash town. I would probably carry some singles if I was in New York to hand to people that are doormen and the tax. But you know, a lot of it is there's nobody to tip here. I've got nobody that I need to tip in
California.
Los Angeles. Yeah, I mean, if I have stuff delivered, I just put it on the card with everything else on Grubhub. So, but John, here's the answer is that in 5 years, I think every stadium will be cash only. And in 10 years,
or
I don't think there will.
No, cashless, you mean.
Cashless. And in 10 years, I don't think there will be any more cash.
Oh, there will always be some cash.
I don't know. I don't know.
Because, for example, those maids and hotel workers, I don't think they declare all those tips.
I can guarantee you they don't.
The way they get by in life is, you know, by able to take that money and use it to give to their families. So there'll always be cash. It may be not as important as it is now. And like you said, there are certain towns that'll always be cash towns. I just think Vegas is one of them. So it's strange that Allegiant Stadium, the home of the Raiders, is the one that's going cashless first.
Do you have Apple Pay?
I do, but I never use it.
All you do is wave your phone over the thing and it's done.
Lisa set it up, but I just never use it.
You should try it. I think you'll be addicted to it. It's a really easy way to pay for stuff. All right, let's see. Last one for me. Derek Carr has missed 2 games in his 6 years as the Raiders' starting quarterback, but John Gruden has never seemed to be sold on him. The offseason, the Raiders signed Marcus Mariota to a 1-year, $7 million contract. Meanwhile, guys like Jameis Winston and Cam Newton both signed for about $1 million. Now, Mariota has been very disappointing in camp, And football people have begun pointing out that this could be one of the biggest salary cap fumbles of 2020. $7 million for Marcus Mariota as a backup. Why do you think Gruden has never grown to be a fan of Derek Carr? And will the Mariota signing go down as yet another Gruden mistake?
Well, I got to see him play first. I'd feel better about the Raiders backup quarterback situation than I do about the Rams, don't you?
Mariota, sure, I do. I do, but you could have had Jameis Winston for $1 million or Cam Newton for $1 million.
Right. But I think you need a dependable backup quarterback in 2020 in the NFL.
Why do you think John Gruden doesn't like Derek Carr? There's always talk he wants to replace him.
I think that most coaches, like the most popular guy on any fan base is the backup quarterback.
Sure.
Because the first guy, if he makes one mistake, they want him out. I don't know why. My only thought is that Carr makes a lot of solid plays. He doesn't always make the home run play. Maybe Gruden's looking for that guy. Maybe Gruden's looking for a guy that can make a home run play. But I don't know. I'm a Raider fan, and I like Carr.
Yeah,
I
know you do.
I like Derek Carr.
And it seems like he's always trying to replace him. Always trying to replace him.
Yeah, he sure does.
All right, there is your scoop for today. Monty McCutcheon, VP and head of NBA referee development and training, is coming on. We had a lot of questions about the refs at the end of those games on Wednesday night. We'll get into that coming up next for you. And in the meantime, I want to let you know that starting today, Disney's new movie Mulan, experience the legend of Mulan as she fights to defend her family and the kingdom. Available to Disney Plus subscribers who unlock premier access. Mason, Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
710 ESPN, Mason, Ireland. What is going on? We are gearing up for game one of the Western Conference semifinals.
Yeah!
Lakers versus Rockets tonight. We got that game for you right here. 4 o'clock pregame with MT and Alan Sliwa. 6 o'clock tip with John Ireland and MT. Big night, and we are off on Monday, so it means when we get back on Tuesday, there will be two games to talk. We'll be up 2-0 at that point.
Oh, we can only hope. And Mace, boy, I'm excited about this. This is one of the great guys in the NBA who I've known for more than 20 years, Monty McCutcheon, who was an NBA referee the entire time I was coming up in the league, and now I'm still in the same place, and he's been promoted to VP and head of NBA referee development and training. Monty, thank you for doing this, man. How you holding up?
I'm doing fine. I appreciate you having me. Referees try not to pass up any civility, so I'm looking forward to today and talking with y'all. So no. This is great. No, things here in the bubble are great. Everyone's doing their job. It's a place that our health and wellness people have really stepped up to the plate and really delivered so that everyone can concentrate on delivering, you know, great basketball to the world. And, you know, we as officials and as an office are trying to deliver and serve the game in a way that the focus can be on our great players and our great franchises and coaching staff. And so far, I think that the bubble has been an overwhelming success, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
All right, Mace, so are you going to tell – now, when I say to Mason all the time, Monty, and you've known me for a lot of years, I know a lot of referees. I have great respect for that job. I know it's very hard to do. Mace, when I ask you, what do you think of the referees, how do you normally answer?
Remember, go, we talk civility, Mace.
Yeah, go ahead and play the clip, Jorge.
What he said last hour. Go ahead, Jorge. Play the clip.
Right,
how do you feel about NBA referees in general?
They suck.
So Monty,
welcome to civility.
Monty, that's what I'm dealing with here. I've tried to explain to Mace that there is actually a science and a training behind what these referees are doing. So with that in mind, Monty, let's start there. There was a lot of talk after the Milwaukee game the other night about those two calls at the end of the game, the one on Goran Dragic and the one on Giannis. When fans find out what you do and they come to you and they say, Monty, how in the world are those fouls? How do you answer?
Well, I think the first thing that I'd probably respond to, you know, in a serious up against Mace's joke, is that we referees, as well as the roles and jobs that y'all have taken on, we've all chosen to live on the historical record. We've chosen to live public lives. And with public lives come scrutiny and come judgment and come with a territory in which we understand that our work is going to be discussed on radio shows, on talk shows, on ESPN, you know, Sports Center, and that's part of the territory and the jobs that we took on. And so I think that the thing that most people don't know, and one of the jokes I make on a regular basis is, when you buy a camera, you're a photographer. When you buy a piano, you bought a piano. And having two eyes does not make someone a referee. Training does. And I think that most people, Mason included, might be quite shocked to know how much training goes into being an NBA referee. In regards to those two plays, what we try to use, and we've been very consistent with the messaging to the league, to the teams, to the players, I put out a tape once a month in which we go over plays from the previous month on our points of education for the year. And one of the points of education that has been very consistent over the last few years, and we put out hundreds of plays and examples to our team so that they're aware of this, is that shooters must be allowed to come back down to a normal playing position and not have what we call speed, quickness, balance, or rhythm being affected. And they have to be able to land. And so from that standpoint, you all remember the play in the Western Conference Finals several years ago in which, you know, a player had his legs or his landing spot taken out from under him, and he no longer was able to play
right.
in that series.
Yeah, the Kawhi
and
play,
that's
yeah.
what instigated this idea that our players and our offensive shooters need to be able to come back down and not have their landing spot taken, because it's a dangerous play. You can land on someone's foot, and in fact, if you do land on someone's foot, we have flagrant fouls. And in this series, we've had a flagrant foul for taking someone's landing spot away in a previous game. And so from that standpoint, we try to be consistent to that work. Now, speed, quickness, and rhythm probably are not affected on the two plays that you talked about. The balance is. And we don't just have 70 referees out there trying to make decisions based on what they think is a foul. We give examples. We send out. We have an internal website in which we're sending out daily examples on plays that we, you know, show our points of education for the year. And so we'll send, you know, on any given day, we might send four examples of landing spots taken away, four examples of freedom of movement plays that we either did well on or we need to do better on. And so our referees are constantly receiving this sort of loop of feedback on calibrating what constitutes good landing space and not landing space, or balance, or rhythm, or speed, or any of those other indicators that we use. Now, that being said, our decision-making is on the public record, and it's fair game for people to disagree whether someone's balance was or was sure. not affected to the point that you and Mace can then say, we disagree. And I understand that. There's judgment involved here. But it's not random judgment. It's calibrated on a regular basis, and it comes, and this is probably the thing that I would say is probably what most people don't know. We have a competition committee that's made up of owners, of players, of coaches, and of general managers. And they are the ones that drive these interpretations. It's the referee's job to then go enforce those interpretations so that the league is represented by all its stakeholders. Referees don't sit around deciding what is and isn't and interpreting this or that. That comes from a wide range of our stakeholders, which we feel gives the league, everyone in our league, a valuable voice in which how the game should look, how it should be refereed, and how it should be adjudicated.
All right. So Monty, I'm going to go back to the end of that Miami-Milwaukee game, which I thought just turned into a mess at the end. To end the game on shooting fouls, I just thought was not good basketball. Dragic, to me, on that play on Middleton, was bolt upright, straight upright. Now, did the referee in that position make the right call?
Yes, he did, and here's why. And it would take... Remember, referees are trained to referee. We referee the defensive player because that's where we need to see the legality of the defensive player. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that separates what appears to be straight up and what constitutes forward movement is not the arms being up. And we won't be able to do it on a radio show, obviously.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some time in the future we would be able to sit down and watch tape and have some fun in that regard. But in this instance, if you go back and look at it, what we use as the demarcation line of whether someone is in a legal guarding position is after the upward shooting motion, was there any movement? So if you look at Chris Middleton on that play and watch for when the upward shooting motion takes place, when the ball starts moving up for his shooting motion, and when you see that, and after that has started, what you see is Gorin just takes one half step forward, and that's where the landing space is taken away from. And so while it appears with his arms straight up that he's standing still, he actually takes a half step forward after the upward shooting motion. And that's what constitutes the foul. Now,
so the argument is he's part of his landing is inhibited.
Taken away. That's right. And I guess the way that I would ask you to at least contemplate it. Now, I'm not trying to win you over. Everyone has their opinion.
I'm not a big contemplation guy, Monty. I don't sound like somebody who contemplates things, but, I just shoot my mouth off.
Based on the verbiage of how you think of our profession, I'd say something like
that.
That being said, I think there's a difference in an NBA referee's view of the difference between subtle and illegal up against marginal. And while you may interpret something as marginal and therefore shouldn't be called, some things can be very subtle. So if you're behind someone on a rebound and right as they jump, you suddenly push them in the small of the back, that has a big impact, even though it's subtle contact, because we can't, when we're in the middle of the air, we can't control that kind of push. And so there are instances where we would have to agree to disagree on potentially on what is marginal or otherwise subtle but effective. But we've been very consistent with when messaging to our team, players must have their landing spot under a normal shooting motion.
Hey, John, let me jump in and ask one more question here.
Yeah.
So do you believe, and I guess in a perfect world, a foul in the first quarter is the same as a foul in the fourth quarter, but does the context matter? Do you reach a point where you say, all right, I'm just going to, it's the final 10 seconds, we're going to let these guys play?
Well, I think that our coach's challenge gives a good indicator there of how our league views that. Our coach's challenge plays in the middle of the second quarter or the third quarter because 2 points is 2 points. And if they feel we've made a mistake, they want those 2 points potentially taken off or reversed, however the coach's challenge may work out. And if we constitute things, if we call that play in the middle of the first quarter and it benefits Team A, and then we capriciously sort of say in the last 10 seconds or 5 seconds or something that's not earmarked in our rule book, but just randomly a official is going, yeah, I'm deciding right now that that's not the time to call this. We're doing a disservice to the calls and the work that we did earlier in the game. And in fact, we are invalidating our own work when we do that. I do think that one of the things that is important to remember in terms of NBA officiating is that we ask people to win the games. And I know that this is a big phrase that people use. Players got to decide the game. But players have to decide the game with legal actions, not illegal actions that on any given night referees capriciously decide to ignore. And if we're going to ever give consistency, which is also one of the great, ask of all officials at every level, just be consistent. Sure. If we're going to do that, we have to have standards that we're willing to enforce at the beginnings of games and at the ends of games, so that if you called that against player X in the middle of the second quarter, and now that exact player is shooting at the end of the fourth quarter, he knows or she knows they're going to get the same call under the conditions. I think that's really important to give valuable work to a service industry, which is what referees are. We serve the game. And you can't do that if I've got 70 referees randomly deciding when the cutoff point is to enforce standards. We can't have that.
Monty McCutcheon is with us. He's the VP and head of NBA referee development and training. He's in the bubble. The Lakers open round 2 against the Rockets tonight at 6:00, and we'll have that game. Monty, I do the games with Michael Thompson, who played in the NBA even before you were a ref.
Sure.
And Michael and I talk a lot about the fact that And I think when you were a ref, you were okay with players coming up and asking you things and questioning you as long as they were respectful. But I think now, Monty, what I'm seeing is technical fouls are hard to figure out. I mean, sometimes a ref will call a technical foul if you just react to a weird call and you throw your hands up in the air. Another time they'll react if there seems to be a weird line as to what constitutes a technical and what doesn't. Is that strictly up to each referee? Kind of what you were just talking about. There are rules, but when it comes to technical fouls, is that a judgment call?
Some are, in terms of language and things like that. I mean, obviously, language can get quite colorful in an NBA game.
Sure.
And I think that grammar becomes really important. You know, when words and some profanity are light grade and low tone, and they have and they're used as adjectives, there's some leeway there. We want to Mace's point, we want some context there. But if you've warned, then that context changes. If someone is constantly complaining, then we need to run the game. We need to be able to make sure that the focus of the game is on the great action of our players and not relationships with referees, and we need to refocus sometimes. That being said, we do have standards that are not judgment, that fall under this line of standards, and we've seen that in this series itself, in which we have what's called the Respect for the Game Guidelines. And once again, this is a 10-year-old rule, interpretation of the rule, in which every team gets multiple examples of this. Air punches, and wave offs, and clapping sarcastically, at an official. All of those physical type acts are standards that we hold officials and teams accountable to.
So when Porzingis or anybody, yeah. Monty, any player does an air punch, you call me for a foul, I punch into the air going, "That's not a foul, Monty." The fact that I threw my hands at you, that's automatic?
Yes, that one is. And as a result, what we would have otherwise is unabated emotion, and we would have no ability for the focus of the game to be on the – I think I'm biased. I fully admit that I'm biased after 25 years on the floor and now in this role. I think we have the best people in the NBA. Best human beings, and I think we have the best athletes in the world in our game. And the focus should not be about referees. Referees are there to set up an environment that is equitable and fair, and that creates an environment so that talent can be exposed. And you do that in a way that's fair on both ends so that the strategies and the talents and the abilities on any given night then become the determining factor of the outcome. And if we do that, and we do it consistently by upholding standards, then everyone knows the playing rules, everyone knows the ground rules, and as such, when it happens, there's a sort of, "Oh, shucks, I shouldn't have done that" moment. The problem comes in is if we as referees don't enforce it consistently, and Team X gets penalized on Wednesday night because
you don't
the referee
do it on
doesn't
Thursday.
Hold the standard, and then on Friday night their opponent does it, and we don't uphold the standard, that feels very poor to our teams, and rightfully so, and that's when it's my job to hold referees accountable.
Okay. Mace,
listen.
Let me get this in.
Yeah, go ahead.
Monty, the last thing I want to ask you about is, Mace, Monty has the best wardrobe of anybody in the NBA.
Oh, nice.
He is, like, you know me, Mace. I go with the pocket square. I got a lot
of
suits that are probably...
Is Monty a pocket square guy?
No, Monty, way past it. Monty has colors and bow ties and hats. And so, Monty, what do you still get to use that stuff in your new job, or is all that stuff in a closet?
Yeah, let me put it this way. When I interviewed for the job, I went in an orange suit so that I could establish right off the bat, hey, I'm probably not the corporate guy you were thinking and we sort of settled, if you want me to take this job, this is who Monty McCutcheon turned out to be in life. My dad told me a long time ago, vanilla's an all right ice cream flavor, it's not much of a lifestyle choice. I've got a few plaids and a few stripes, but I've been afforded my eccentricities, and so I'm happy.
I love
Hopefully
it.
They're happy and we can move forward.
Yep. All right, so Monty, here's the way we'll conclude. So I'm obviously, you used a phrase, you said unabated emotion. That's what the Mason and Ireland show is about. It's about unabated emotion. So I came after you hard. You've cleared a lot of stuff up for me. I understand more than I did before. You're educating me. And so I will not again say referees suck.
Well, that's great. And, you know, if we ever did have a time to watch tape, I think that a lot of people who sit down with us are fascinated by the depth of which we really try to be good at our work and the nuance that we apply to trying to serve the greatest game in the world, to my opinion. And so anytime that we would have that opportunity, I'd love to share our profession with you. I appreciate cool. you having me on.
All right, Monty, be safe,
Thank
man.
You,
Thanks
Monty.
For doing this.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Y'all be well, man.
All right. Well, I mean, what can I say now? He's such a nice guy. He's so well-informed. He's
Well, they do train, Mace. They do train almost religiously. Like, I'm still not sure I would have called that foul on Dragic or the one on Giannis.
No, but, I wouldn't have, still.
But if his point is that they've sent tape after tape after tape saying you have to let the shooter land no matter what, then maybe Dragic doesn't run his body right up to Middleton. I think Middleton threw his body forward rather than Dragic going there, but I'd have to go back and look at it again. I don't know. Like, Kobe used to do that. Kobe used to lean in. Harden does that a lot.
Oh, sure.
Harden leans his body forward, and if the defender is standing up straight.
Trying to get the contact, yeah.
Right, so that's something to watch in this series. Bradford, later in the show, we're having Anthony Slater on from The Athletic, who has done a deep dive on what the Lakers need to do to stop Harden, and that'll be part of that discussion. But one of the things you need to do is keep your hands down.
Yeah.
Because sometimes he's just shooting the ball to try and get you to hit your hands.
Oh, so
he's not
don't
even trying to make
don't
it.
Keep your hands up when
Correct.
Harden is shooting?
Not always. If he's moving forward, Mace, he's just trying to draw a foul. So if you see Harden's left, he's left-handed.
Yeah.
So if you see Harden's left hand, instead of going up in the air to take a jumper, pushing forward into you like he's pushing you in the chest.
Right. Drop your hands.
Yep. Get him down. Because then he has nowhere to put his hand. He's trying to throw his hand into your hands.
Got it. Yeah.
So that's part of the game. There was a series last year where LeBron guarded Harden with his hands behind his back. LeBron put his own hands clasped behind his back just to prove that point. That, look, he's trying to throw his hands into mine. So now that he can't do it, let's see if he can score. So that's part of the dance.
All right, we got Radio Tinder coming up for you at 2:45. We've got, as John mentioned, Anthony Slater from The Athletic at 3 o'clock. We've got time for a couple of quick phone calls. Your prediction of how this series plays out. I've got Lakers in 5, John. You've got
6. Lakers in 6.
Lakers in 6. How does the series play out? 877-710-ESPN. That's 877-710-ESPN. Mason in Ireland, 710-ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. What's up? Tonight we got game one of the Western Conference semifinals, Lakers versus Nuggets. It is LeBron and AD versus Harden and Westbrook. It is a showdown. It's only the second time in playoff history, John, that two teams have faced each other with two players each averaging over 25 points per game.
Yeah, Harden and Westbrook are the top scoring duo in the league, and I think AD and LeBron are right behind them.
Yeah.
And it should be. So we're letting you react, make predictions, tell us what you think at 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. Here's Kyle on line one. Hey, Kyle, you're on 710-ESPN. Hi.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up, Kyle?
Later in the afternoon. What's going on, guys? Hey, Mace, I hope you know that the Full House still beats a flush, man. Don't know if you learned that yet, but...
Nope, anyway, I'm still playing that hand wrong, my friend. Still playing it wrong.
I feel it, brother. I feel it. I think it's going to be Lakers in 5. I think the X factor is going to be Kuzma. Not only has his scoring going to be pertinent in the second round, but I think his defense is going to be – he's going to play a major key. If we can keep LeBron off of Harden, especially in crunch time, he can throw a big body like Kuzma. If he's playing defense and move his feet like he has been in the playoffs, I think it'll be Lakers in five. If you let Harden get his points, but then you shut everybody else down, AD's got to score – I got to at least average 35 and 13 – and we should run away with it in five, maybe
all right.
Four if we get lucky.
All right. Kyle, I like the way you're thinking. And which hand's better, a full house or a flush?
Oh, please.
All depends. If you got a royal flush, it trumps that full house.
If you're
a straight flush, bust that full house. But you're gonna chase that river for that that two outer.
You bet. You know I am. All right. See you at the tables.
Mace.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Westbrook is a bigger problem for the Lakers than Harden, I think.
Okay.
The Lakers and Rockets played three times this year, but we're going to throw out the third one because it was in the bubble.
Yeah.
And in that bubble game, both LeBron and Westbrook sat out. All right? So that game doesn't count. So let's look at the other two games. On January 18th in Houston, AD sat out, but the Lakers won anyway. LeBron had 31 and 12. Kuzma had 23. Danny Green and KCP had 20 each. In the other game, at Staples Center, AD had 32, but the Rockets won. And the reason? Westbrook. He averaged in those two games 38, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists.
Wow.
In the Rockets' win, Harden only scored 15 points. I'm telling you, Westbrook is a tougher cover for the Lakers because Harden isn't as fast as Westbrook. The Lakers guards can play great half-court defense, guys like Danny Green and KCP. Russ is so dangerous in the open court that he just goes right to the rim. So keep an eye on Westbrook.
Okay, so want to hear a crazy sassy stat?
Yeah.
Westbrook lifetime versus the Lakers. He averages 38 points, 8.5 rebounds, 6 assists, shooting 63%.
Wow.
Lifetime.
Yeah, he loves playing against
them. He loves playing the Lakers.
He's from here.
Yep.
Now, the fact that the game's in the bubble might make a difference. A lot of times when Michael and I do the games at Staples Center, Westbrook's whole family is sitting down in front of us.
Right.
I just think he loves to put on a show for them. I still think, even with Russ, and you know how much I love Russ, Lakers win in six. Here's Danny in Downey. Danny, you're on 710 ESPN. What do you think?
What's up, Danny?
Hey, how are you guys doing? I listen to you guys all the time.
Thank you. We need
Excellent.
You.
Excellent. Keep that up.
Hey, so, yeah, absolutely. I love to hear you guys. So my thought is this. Who's the better team, Portland? The games that all the point guards play, the point guard, that really good point guard,
right?
That shooter, are they better than the Rockets?
No. Rockets are better than Portland.
Okay, so then the only thing we need to do is contain Westbrook. He is a UCLA.
Well, Harden's
product.
The leading scorer in the league, Danny. He averages 34 a game.
Yeah, but outside shots. He doesn't drive that much.
Right.
All outside. So the same idea that we had, the boxing in type of mentality that we had
on Lillard,
Blazers.
Yeah.
Exactly the same type of defense. The one that drives in is, we just got to take some charges. Who's going to come up big is KCP and Green on their defense, and Caruso. Caruso was huge against Portland. So
yeah, he did a great job. And by the way, the previous caller pointed out Kuzma was spectacular defensively in the Portland series.
That's right.
He's been really good.
Right.
That's right. I think defensively it's going to be really fascinating to see the way Frank Vogel decides to cover James Harden and Russell Westbrook.
Yes, the heart of the series.
Is Rondo playing as well?
Yes. Rondo will be in uniform and available tonight.
Playoff Rondo.
Playoff Rondo, great offensively, but defensively.
He's not a great defender. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, listen, thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate you being out there every day, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny.
Right, thank you.
Let's squeeze in Alex from Porter Ranch. Hey, Alex, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up, Alex?
Hey, what's up? Hey, Mason, I hope your movie theater business is going to bounce back soon and everything goes well. I'm scared of Houston. I mean, they came, Harden had a dumpster fire of a game in game seven, you know, almost choked that away if not for the block. And now there's no pressure on the Rockets at all. And I am afraid that, you know, with the lifting of that prick on their chest, you know, I feel like the shots might fall for them. And if the threes are falling for them, I don't know how we will compete with that. I think one of the big keys is for Anthony Davis to play as a center in this series. He's got to accept the fact that he might be the only big man on the floor and to play inside. Don't play on the perimeter, because the more ADs on the perimeter, the worse it is for us and the easier it is for P.J. Tucker and those guys on defense.
All right. Thank you, Alex. Well,
thanks, man.
I think those are all good points. Anthony Davis should take advantage of his height. He's 6'11". The tallest Rocket's going to be 6'7".
Although, don't you think we should make them adjust to us and not the other way around?
But I think that was Alex's point. Stick AD in the block and make them try and stop him shooting over them.
Right.
I think Anthony Davis could have a monster series.
But I think in this series, John, don't you think JaVale and Dwight Howard may play more important roles? Don't the Lakers go big against them being small?
I don't think so. I think that depends how the games go. But they're going to try and turn it into a track meet where they get open threes. They're going to shoot 50 threes no matter what. So you have to decide, you know, what that means is long rebounds. And you can run.
Yep.
And the Lakers are an excellent transition team. And if you run and you can beat the Rockets down to the other end, you get a lot of easy baskets. The Rockets are making their threes. They're going to be really hard to beat. And let me throw this in there.
Yeah.
If they don't win tonight, if the Lakers don't win tonight, don't freak out. We lost game one to Portland. You know, the Lakers are the better team, but I think tonight's going to be it's like early rounds of a boxing match. See how they throw in punches and figure it out from there.
All right, coming up next for you is Radio Tinder. Linz is going to throw a bunch of stuff at us. Don't forget, we're working our way towards game one, Lakers-Rockets. 4:00 pregame, 6:00 tip right here on the home of the Lakers, 710 ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
710 ESPN, Mason in Ireland, thank you very much for being out there. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, 3:15, one half hour from right now, is the quiz, a chance to win one of only four keys that could start that brand new 2021 Mazda CX-30 from John Patterson at OC Mazda. So make sure you keep listening. Something we say during Radio Tinder could be on the quiz. Linz, what do you got for us?
All right, guys. Novak Djokovic is the current number one ranked pro tennis player in the world. He's also the favorite to win the 2020 U.S. Open in Flushing Meadows, where the players are all living and competing in a unique bubble situation. Despite the precautions put in place for COVID-19, Djokovic has chosen to branch out on his own. Apparently, he drops $40,000 on a rental house instead of staying in the hotel provided and paid for by the U.S. Tennis Association. And I guess he did so all because the windows in his hotel room wouldn't open. Would either of you guys, any of you guys, spend your own hard-earned money to have your own house if the company was providing lodging? Swipe left or swipe right?
Swipe left, man. I live on a dime if I can. I am a cheap son of a gun. So, you know, for example, they put me, when I went to the World Series in Boston, they put me in an Airbnb somewhere in the middle of I don't know where. I could have gotten a hotel closer to the park, but I'm like, hey, this is free. If it's free, it's me.
Swipe right. I particularly think if Djokovic can't open the windows, and I think he had COVID, Lindsay. Do I have
yes,
that correct?
Yes, he did. Yep.
So it's obviously a real concern for him, and he wants a more secure environment, and he can certainly afford it. He's made more money than any player on tour right now, with the exception of maybe Federer. Maybe Nadal, but he's top three. If he wants to feel safer in his own place, in his own confines, more power to him. I'm swipe right all the way.
Jorge, what about you?
I've traveled for like 6 years in my TV job, and I've had to stay in places where I told the guys, look, I don't mind paying a little extra to pay, you know, to stay in a safer place. So let's do it. And I've done it, man. I've paid.
Yeah,
to pay
I've told you guys this story before. The guy who runs Backstage Lakers is, and we've had him on the show to talk about this, is a guy named Michael Koger. Great guy.
Oh, great guy. Yeah.
Koger is afraid of ghosts. And there are two.
Oh, Lord.
No, I'm serious. There are two hotels we stay in that have a long history of ghosts. One's in Oklahoma City, one's in Milwaukee. And as soon as we check in, Koger says, I'm sorry, guys, I'm out. And he goes down the street and checks into another hotel because he knows he's not going
to
sleep.
Oh, I need to talk to Koger. That's just lunacy right there. Come on, Michael. That ain't real.
No, but Mace, were you not here the day we brought him on to talk about this?
No, I wasn't here that day.
Yeah, I mean, he'll come on.
Or he just doesn't remember because he doesn't remember.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Oh, no, I could have been here for all I know.
Koger will remember whether you
He could have been on the show 10 times. I wouldn't
No, he's
be
very
able
matter of
you.
Fact about it. And by the way, Michael Thompson backs up Koger. He says, brothers don't do ghosts.
Yeah.
Because they just, we just don't, we want nothing to do with them. So Koger goes and stays down the street. By the way, Lou Williams, when he played for us, checked out for the same reason. He's afraid of ghosts, doesn't want to deal with them.
Just ridiculous.
All right, next one. Former Yankee star Alex Rodriguez is claiming that his ownership group got screwed out buying the Mets. A-Rod is accusing Mets owners Fred and Jeff Wilpon of unfair negotiating practices. Man, I can't talk today. Saying the process was rigged, the New York Post reported. The Post says A-Rod was pressed into telling Mets banker Steve Greenberg how high his group would go before the final bid ended. And then A-Rod reportedly then reluctantly confided to Greenberg that his group would go about $2.3 billion. And then Cohen came up with a high bid of $2.35 billion. Doesn't sound like a coincidence to me.
Right.
Did A-Rod get screwed out of buying the Mets? Swipe left or right?
I remember when swipe right on this. I remember, Mace, when we were looking for a house in Manhattan Beach.
Yep.
We didn't deal with a realtor in the network down here. Like, all the realtors knew each other. And we had a high bid on a house and didn't get it.
Yep.
And that's when we realized, oh, it's a relationship business.
Sure.
And I think that's what's going on here. They sold it to somebody that I'm sure MLB was in on these conversations.
Yep.
I'm sure the other owners were in this conversation. I think when these teams get sold, they end up with the guy they want, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think A-Rod got screwed here. They shouldn't have been sharing information between bidding parties. And, you know, I think A-Rod, J-Lo, all that stuff would have been great for baseball, having an ownership group that includes
I agree.
A-Rod and J-Lo. To me, that's really sexy. That's really exciting.
Especially
I would be all for that. Minority ownership at a time when we're talking about how people of color aren't in positions of power in sports. I would have found a way to swing that thing to A-Rod. It would have been the best thing for the game.
Wait, didn't Mark Anthony and J-Lo had a stake
they had
in the Dolphins?
Piece. They had a piece of the Dolphins.
They still do.
Oh.
Oh, do they?
Well, they're not married anymore. Did one get it?
But they still – yeah, we've had this conversation. Remember, they both still – they split the ownership that they had between the two of them.
Okay, got it.
Last one here really quick. SpaceX founder and CEO Elon Musk. He recently shared the wonderful prediction that artificial intelligence will more than likely overtake humans in the next 5 years.
Yes.
He's back with some even more great news about the future.
Okay.
Musk, who's hellbent on colonizing Mars and has already sold tickets to the International Space Station for $55 million, said during the virtual Humans to Mars conference on Monday that there's a, quote, good chance that the first settlers on Mars will die. Despite that minor concern, Musk is still full steam ahead on building a self-sustaining city on Mars by 2050. Is this a realistic goal for Elon Musk? Swipe left or right?
Well, think about it. So I'll swipe right. Mace, if you would have said that he was going to build an electric car that everyone would want to buy and it would be the hottest, trendiest car on the market.
Right.
And you would have said that 20 years ago, we all would have thought the guy was nuts, and he did it. I'm not betting against Elon Musk.
Yeah, I am also not betting against Elon Musk. No way, no how. I think that guy is one of the smartest, most inventive geniuses we have on the planet right now. I fully believe that we will be on Mars. I fully believe that we will colonize it. And we'll do it through private enterprise as opposed to public money, which I think is a plus for us. I trust in Elon Musk. I know he's a little bit crazy, but I think he does see the future more than anybody alive right now.
And he is the number one supporter of President Kanye. So think of the possibilities with Elon Musk in charge.
President Kanye.
And in the words of both Kirk Cousins and Ivan Drago, if he dies, he dies.
If he dies, yeah, he dies.
Go to Mars. There'll be people that'll want to go. Lindsay, there'll be people that'll want to go anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I would go anyway. If somebody told me right now I could go to Mars and I would die in 10 years, I'd still do it.
Yeah, me too.
Wait a minute. Lindsay, you're too young. You can't. Mason and I can go. You're not old enough to.
Ireland, you wouldn't go.
Oh, no. Are you kidding? I don't even want to go to Nevada.
Yeah, I'd take the family. I'd take the whole family.
I'd go. You go down in history. It would be like a.
But Lindsay, you wouldn't
experience.
Even make it to 50.
So, if I die, I die.
Wow, right, but you Drago. Make history. People will be talking about Lindsay for years and decades
it's
to come.
Not even say, that.
Remember that redheaded girl that went to Mars and died before she turned 50? What a terrible loss.
It's not even that. I just think, like, what an awesome experience would that
be. Yeah, me too.
Especially to be among the first people to go. That'd be great.
Yep, me too. Memorable way to go.
So it'll be Mason, Juan, Sophie, Lindsay.
Fredo.
We got to take Chewy.
Yep.
And then Elon Musk.
And Kirk Cousins, maybe.
Kirk Cousins and Kanye.
Cousins, yeah, exactly. It's a whole crew.
And Kanye is president of Mars.
There you go. Yeah, that's where Kanye could be president, Mars. Kind of is
idea.
That already?
It's a great idea.
All right. Coming up next for you, Anthony Slater from The Athletic will join us with a preview of what's going on tonight in the bubble, Houston versus the Lakers, game one.